Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is February 27, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments in fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about Ukraine justice system employee caught mining crypto at work. Money sender Azimo to use Ripple Tech and XRP for Philippines remittance corridor. Hong Kong to consider additional FATF-style regulations for crypto exchanges. Over $190 million in Bitcoin liquidated on BitMEX amid crypto market sell-off. Stellar invests in security token platform targeting developing markets. Iranian General Advocates crypto use for skirting sanctions, report. Ex-Microsoft engineer used Bitcoin to help embezzle millions from tech giant. Steven Siegel settles token touting charges with SEC over 2018 ICO. Startup tokenizes $2.2 billion in commercial real estate through Polymath. Watch, Zcash Foundation explains compromise path to funding ZEC development. World's top crypto miners race to roll out top-of-line machines ahead of Bitcoin halving. Bitcoin sees corrective price bounce after hitting one-month lows. Binance throws weight behind Shift Network in travel rule standards race. Cut the consensus, you can't run a business like a blockchain. Now let's get started. Ukraine justice system employee caught mining crypto at work. An IT staffer at Ukraine State Judicial Administration has been charged with illegally mining cryptocurrency at his workplace. The Prosecutor's Office of Kiev reported Wednesday on its Facebook page that, together with other agencies, it has completed an investigation into the employee who worked in the Data Systems Division of the Court Administration Department. The unnamed individual is said to have taken advantage of the equipment and internet bandwidth allocated for Ukraine's court documents database and the judiciary web portal to mine cryptocurrency from January to May 2018. He is additionally alleged to have used workplace servers to host external websites, including three online stores and a website for motorcycle fans, the prosecutor's office said. The employee has been charged with illegal intervention in the work of computers and computer networks, and in the distribution of harmful software. According to Ukraine's criminal code, if found guilty, he faces up to 6 years in prison and a ban on working in government agencies. The news follow a handful of other cases of illegal mining by government employees in the country. Last November, Ukraine's Railway Administration, Ukrzaliznitsia, caught employees mining crypto using the company's power capacity in the city of Lviv. And in August, law enforcement uncovered an illicit crypto mining facility at the South Ukraine nuclear power plant. Money sender Azimo to use Ripple Tech and XRP for Philippines remittance corridor. European money transfer service Azimo is tapping tech from blockchain firm Ripple for its remittance corridor to the Philippines. Announced Tuesday, Azimo will begin using Ripple's on-demand liquidity (ODL) service speed up the transfer of customers' funds. The service will notably utilize the XRP cryptocurrency to move value to the Southeast Asian nation in seconds, where it is converted into Philippines pesos and passed to recipients. Remittance firms provide a vital service for the large numbers of Filipino workers abroad looking to send funds back home to their families. The market is a valuable one, hitting a record high of $33.5 billion in 2019, 3.9% higher than previous year. The partnership signals a move by the two companies looking to capture a larger portion of the country's lucrative remittance market, the fourth largest globally, according to World Bank figures. In addition, Ripple says ODL has the potential to reduce liquidity costs when compared to traditional banking solutions, which are often slow and costly. Richard Ambrose, Azimo CEO, said the timing was right for such a partnership as Ripple has been increasing its remittance partnerships, most recently with an Intermex deal earlier in the month. Ripple also took a $50 million stake in MoneyGram in November, with the remittance platform agreeing to use Ripple Solutions and XRP within its services as part of the deal. "We've been interested for a long time in the potential of digital assets like XRP to make cross-border payments better for customers," said Ambrose. Hong Kong to consider additional FATF-style regulations for crypto exchanges. Hong Kong may soon bolster its policing of the cryptocurrency sector to better conform with international anti-money laundering norms, Financial Secretary Paul Chan said in his annual budget speech Wednesday. Promising that detailed proposals will come later this year, Chan said new regulations could target virtual asset service providers, or VASPs, the catch-all term used by the Financial Action Task Force, FATF, in its latest travel rule guidance. New regulations could raise the heat on crypto exchanges, OTC desks and brokers in Hong Kong, a global crypto hub. Such entities are already monitored by the Hong Kong Monetary Authority, HKMA, which in December recommended that VASPs stay vigilant in self-regulating their customers' goings-on. Authorized institutions should keep abreast of international and local developments to maintain an up-to-date understanding of risks, and apply a risk-based approach that supports responsible financial innovation as well as effective MLTF risk management, HKMA's AML enforcer, Carmen Chu, said at the time. The prospect of government-mandated regulations comes months after the FATF, the global AML standards-setting watchdog, rated Hong Kong largely compliant with its recommendations around emerging technologies like cryptocurrency. But Hong Kong wants to further build out its anti-financial crimes framework, Chan's speech shows. Countries are clamoring to get ahead of FATF's crypto guidelines. Some newcomers, such as Paraguay, have taken their first steps in regulating VASPs, while others have set up international partnerships to monitor cryptocurrency transactions. At the same time, crypto firms themselves are angling to comply with the travel rule, which mandates that cryptocurrency exchanges and others share transaction information above certain thresholds. They have until June 2020 to work it out. Over $190 million in Bitcoin liquidated on BitMEX amid crypto market sell-off. The cryptocurrency markets were shaken yesterday amid a flurry of selling that saw more than $190 million worth of longs and shorts liquidated on well-known derivatives exchange BitMEX. According to data analytics provider Skew, around $6.1 million buy and $190 million sell liquidations occurred, bringing it to a total of around $196 million worth of Bitcoin, BTC, long and short positions. Beginning at around 1400 Coordinated Universal Time on February 26, the price of BTC began to fall below $9,000. An hour later, BitMEX saw its largest amount of liquidation since the new year began, rising well above $100 million. The move in the derivatives market comes during a sell-off in crypto's spot market that saw BTC's price fall more than 6% to a low of $8,675, CoinDesk BPI data shows. Amid global coronavirus tensions, traditional markets are also in turmoil with major indices such as the S&P 500 and Dow Jones Industrial down more than 7% on the week. BTC's latest price action continues to throw cold water on the notion that cryptocurrencies can act as safe haven assets during times of uncertainty around stocks and bonds, with some of the largest levels of derivative volume ever witnessed. Bitcoin has been uncorrelated to other asset classes. If stocks drop, this does not mean Bitcoin has to pump. If gold prices climb, this does not mean Bitcoin will rise with it every time, Coinist research analyst Luke Martin noted in a tweet. In addition, options volumes on OKEx, another popular crypto derivatives exchange, saw the largest uptick of notional volume in its history, above the $15 million mark. Notional volume is the value of the underlying asset in the derivatives market. It can be the total value of a position, how much value a position controls, or an agreed-upon amount in a contract. When there is a large amount of notional volume on a downward price, that generally signals the movement as a legitimately bearish one. Traders now need to look toward the 200-day moving average near $8,773, as failure to close above would likely result in deeper losses in the coming weeks. Stellar invests in security token platform targeting developing markets. The investment arm of cryptocurrency project Stellar has made its first enterprise bid on a security token platform that provides emerging economies with access to traditional assets and cryptocurrencies. The Stellar Development Foundation (SDF) announced Wednesday it has invested $715,000 worth of Lumens (XLM) tokens in DSTOQ, a security token platform that provides traders with access to global markets from their smartphones. The foundation's CEO and executive director, Donnell Dixon, said DSTOQ's goals clearly aligned with Stellar's aim to make financial services more accessible. It deeply resonates with our mission, which is creating equitable access to the global financial system, she said in a Twitter video post. This is the first investment SDF has made from its enterprise fund, which was created in September to support projects that contribute to the broader Stellar ecosystem. DSTOQ, which is domiciled in Liechtenstein, already leverages the Stellar protocol to create security tokens that users can buy and sell peer-to-peer. In a statement, DSTOQ CEO and co-founder Craig McGregor described the SDF investment as a vote of confidence for its vision to use blockchain technology to develop new financial products as well as to improve accessibility into global markets. Built on the blockchain, DSTOQ says it can tokenize blue-chip stocks, like Apple or Google shares, and make them available to investors irrespective of where they are in the world. The company opted to use Stellar in October 2018, saying its consensus algorithm made the protocol secure against 51% attacks. DSTOQ says that it plans to use the SDF investment to develop new technology and help fund the platform's expansion into the Vietnamese and South African markets. Iranian General Advocates Crypto Use for Skirting Sanctions, Report. An Iranian general is reportedly calling for the use of cryptocurrency to evade sanctions. Saeed Mohammed, commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Army of Guardians of the Islamic Revolution, or SEF for short, a branch of the Iranian Armed Forces, said in a speech Wednesday that Iran should look to cryptocurrencies to bolster international investment despite heavy sanctions on the nation, reported Coinit.ir. We are demanding the creation of a more sophisticated mechanism, a commodities exchange, to bypass sanctions, he said. To circumvent sanctions, we must develop solutions such as the exchange of products and the use of cryptocurrencies with our partnerships in other countries. The news was first shared by Coinit.ir, a Farsi-language crypto news organization, on Telegram Wednesday. Telegram is a popular app for sharing information in Iran, with Bloomberg describing it as one of the most influential messaging platforms in the Middle East. Iran has long been a target of U.S. sanctions, with leaders and other residents being placed under individual sanctions through the U.S. Treasury Department Office of Foreign Asset Control's specially designated nationals list. Sanctions are designed to isolate a nation from the global financial system, preventing international entities from investing in local projects or letting sanctioned nations easily trade with global partners. The first sanctioned crypto addresses even belonged to Iranian nationals. More recently, the Financial Action Task Force, the intergovernmental body which creates standards for combating financial crime worldwide, added Iran to its own blacklist due to alleged non-compliance with anti-terrorism financing requirements. Iran has been laying the groundwork for a broader use of cryptocurrencies. The national government had previously been working with blockchain startups to update its financial infrastructure, with private banks backing some projects and the central government going so far as to provide funding for at least one company. Speculation that Iran would formally try to evade sanctions using cryptocurrency has long been rampant, but at least one source told CoinDesk in February 2019 that it would be too suspicious for the central bank to actually go ahead with any project in that area. Ex-Microsoft engineer used Bitcoin to help embezzle millions from tech giant. A U.S. court has found a former Microsoft software engineer guilty of embezzling millions of dollars and turning it into Bitcoin, BTC, to fund a life of luxury. Volodymyr Kovashik, 25, was convicted Tuesday by the U.S. District Court in Seattle of 18 separate federal felonies that defrauded Microsoft out of a total of $10 million, according to a statement from the Department of Justice. A Ukrainian citizen based in the town of Renton, Washington, Kovashik worked full-time for Microsoft from 2016 to 2018. Involved in developing and testing the company's online retail sales platform, he used his account access to steal what is described as currency stored value, including digital gift cards that he subsequently resold on the internet over a seven-month period. Kovashik built a lavish lifestyle using the embezzled funds, purchasing a $160,000 Tesla and a lakefront home worth an estimated $1.6 million. After uncovering the scheme, Microsoft confronted Kovashik and fired him in June 2018. Kovashik, who claimed at trial to be working on a special project for the company, stole amounts totaling roughly $12,000 under his own account before using test email accounts associated with fellow Microsoft employees to begin embezzling millions of dollars from the company. Changing funds into Bitcoin, he would use a mixing service to obfuscate its origins before transferring the ill-gotten gains into his bank account. In total, Bitcoin proceeds of over $2.8 million were transferred into his bank account. In tax returns filed during this period, Kovashik claimed the funds were a gift from a relative. The trial, which lasted 5 days, found the engineer guilty on 5 counts of wire fraud, 6 counts of money laundering, 2 counts of aggravated identity theft, 2 counts of filing false tax returns and 1 count each of mail fraud, bank card fraud and using a company computer for illicit purposes. Speaking after the trial, Special Agent Ryan Corner from the Internal Revenue Service's Criminal Investigations Division highlighted that Kovashik's conviction was a result of work carried out by the IRS. Criminals who think they can avoid detection by using cryptocurrency and laundering through mixers are put on notice. You will be caught and you will be held accountable, he said. Kovashik faces as much as 20 years in prison when he is sentenced by the presiding judge on June 1. Steven Siegel settles token touting charges with SEC over 2018 ICO. Martial artist and actor Steven Seagal has been charged for his role in promoting a 2018 initial coin offering ICO. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission (SEC) said in a statement on Thursday that Seagal did not disclose payments received in return for promoting the token launched by Bitcoin2Gen (B2G) in February of that year. The SEC said Seagal had not disclosed he was offered $250,000 in cash and $750,000 worth of B2G tokens in exchange for his services in promoting the ICO. These had included social media posts calling on his followers and fans not to miss out on the token investment, according to the SEC order. He also issued a press release titled, Zen Master Steven Seagal has become the brand ambassador of Bitcoin2Gen. Seagal was further quoted in a B2G press release saying he backed the ICO wholeheartedly. These investors were entitled to know about payments Seagal received or was promised to endorse this investment so they could decide whether he may be biased, said Christina Littman, chief of the SEC Enforcement Division's cyber unit. Celebrities are not allowed to use their social media influence to tout securities without appropriately disclosing their compensation. Even at its launch, B2G had been compelled to issue a statement refuting accusations it was a pyramid scheme over its marketing practices. A month later, the Tennessee Department of Commerce and Insurance warned the state's residents about the token project. The SEC has previously advised celebrity endorsements of a token may be illegal if it is deemed a security. Promoters must disclose the nature, scope, and amount of compensation received in exchange for the promotion, the regulator says in today's announcement. The SEC order states Segal broke the anti-touting provisions of federal securities laws and has agreed to pay $157,000 in disgorgement without admitting or denying any wrongdoing. The disgorgement covers the actor's promotional payments, with prejudgment interest and a penalty of $157,000, according to the SEC. He's also agreed not to promote any security for 3 years. The SEC said the investigation is continuing. Startup tokenizes $2.2 billion in commercial real estate through Polymath. Commercial real estate marketplace Red Swan has tokenized $2.2 billion in real estate through security token platform Polymath. According to Red Swan CEO Ed Nwokdi, $780 million of that is available to investors in pre-sale, while the company has another $4 billion in real estate in its tokenization pipeline. The $2.2 billion represents 16 different Class A commercial properties based in Austin and Houston, Texas, Brooklyn, NY, Oakland, California, and Ontario, Canada. Tokenization has struggled to transform the multi-trillion dollar real estate market as institutions hesitate to re-engineer back offices until they see liquidity. Graham Moore, head of tokenization at Polymath, believes this project will work where others failed. I think what kind of happened in the past was there were platforms like Harbor, Propeller and Fluidity, which were really tech companies, Moore said. They didn't really have the real estate background or the expertise to understand how the private real estate market works. Harbor's flagship project reportedly crumbled over paperwork issues. The startup was acquired by crypto custodian BitGo earlier this month. The Fluidity and Propeller project was quietly shelved last summer. New York City-based Red Swan is holding investors' funds in escrow and plans to distribute shares in April. Meanwhile, Nwokdi said Red Swan is in the middle of becoming a registered investment advisor with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, which will allow it to manage assets for accredited investors. The tokens are Street 20 tokens running on Ethereum, but Red Swan plans to switch over to an enterprise blockchain platform in the future for increased speed and security, Nwokdi said. Polymath only provides the tokenization technology while Red Swan appraises, markets and sells the deals. Nwokdi, an 18-year veteran in the real estate space, turned to tokenization because he was looking for a way to open up high-quality real estate investment, usually only available for institutions and high-net-worth individuals, to accredited investors. Red Swan claims it has 30,000 accredited investors on its platform. You have a very large segment of investors who are between $500,000 and $10 million that were not participating because they just don't have enough equity to buy a quality piece of real estate, said Nwokdi. So they're focused on more risky, lower class level projects. Nwokdi also hopes to help property owners who are property rich and cash poor by allowing them to pull more equity out of their properties without having to go to the bank. While banks will usually only allow roughly 50% leverage on a given asset, Red Swan allows property owners to tokenize 90% of the net equity underlying a property. Red Swan makes money by taking a percentage of the equity that's issued, and tokens sit within a digital wallet custodied by Prime Trust and are insured up to $1 billion. Watch, Zcash Foundation explains compromise path to funding ZEC development. Democracy is tough, maybe even more so for decentralized crypto networks. Zcash investors, community members and its flagship firms Electric Coin Company, ECC, and the Zcash Foundation undertook an arduous governance refresh in 2019. The process, which ECC CEO and Zcash co-founder Zuko Wilcox described as emotionally painful at times, culminated in an approved funding structure beginning in October 2020. We asked Zcash Foundation Executive Director Josh Cincinnati about building sustainable ways to fund the development of Zcash, a privacy-preserving cryptocurrency some view as a public good. The thing that really matters most when you are talking about funding public goods is to establish legitimacy in the process. Everyone in the community, the people who use your protocol, are bought into the process that decides these things, Cincinnati said. Zcash is expensive to develop due to its high reliance on bleeding-edge technology. Indeed, the ECC, which conducts the majority of Zcash's protocol updates, issued an impressive privacy breakthrough with its Halo technology in 2019 despite its books running in the red. As CoinDesk reported at the time, the Zcash founder's reward was set to end 4 years after the cryptocurrency's launch in 2016. Wilcox said in a Medium article in August that he planned to raise the issue again once the reward was retired. At ETH Denver earlier this month, Wilcox and Cincinnati pledged mutual support of Zcash Improvement Proposal ZIP 1014, which will go into effect around October 2020. Under the new fund, both firms will receive a portion of 20% of the network's mining rewards set aside for funding the cryptocurrency's development. It seems like a very good compromise that still enables the ECC to continue receive funding and the Zcash Foundation to receive funding, Cincinnati said, but it requires both organizations to adhere to pretty strict accountability requirements. World's top crypto miners race to roll out top-of-line machines ahead of Bitcoin halving. Two of the largest Bitcoin mining equipment manufacturers are in a neck-and-neck race to roll out top-of-the-line machines ahead of Bitcoin's BTC halving event in less than 3 months. On Thursday, Beijing-based mining giant Bitmain launched its latest Antminer S19 and S19 Pro models, boasting computing power as high as 110 terahashes per second (THS) and an energy cost of 29.5 watts per terahash with T. Going by the firm's specifications, the two models would currently be the most profitable Bitcoin mining devices if available, closely followed by the WhatsMiner M3OS from Bitmain's Shenzhen-based rival, MicroBT, according to a miner profitability index from F2Pool. The launch comes on the back of a heated battle between Bitmain and MicroBT, which has gained a significant share of the mining equipment business after selling about 600,000 units of its M20 series in 2019, chipping away at Bitmain's longtime market dominance. MicroBT, which launched its flagship M30 models in December, has started taking pre-orders for the latest and most powerful product line since last week, with deliveries of sample units starting as early as next month. According to MicroBT's major distributor Pangolin Miner, the M3OS priced at $2,430 apiece touts a computing power of 86th S with an energy cost of 38 with T and uses 8-nanometer chips supplied by Samsung. The firm said some devices will ship from March to May, but large pre-orders would have to wait until as late as June. On the other hand, prices and the pre-order delivery dates for Bitmain's S19 models have not yet been announced. Adding to the uncertainty is whether Bitmain can deliver production on a large scale, since the latest models adopt 7nm chips that come in limited supplies from its vendor, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. It also remains to be seen how the industry will react to the releases of top-notch but more expensive mining equipment, as Bitcoin's price has retracted from its recent growth momentum above $10,000. Currently, Bitmain's older model the Antminer S9 is still one of the most widely used miners, generating a daily gross margin of about 30% at Bitcoin's current price, based on F2Pool's index. Further, the coronavirus outbreak in China has affected the country's manufacturing and logistics businesses, causing delays for those that were looking to expand or upgrade existing mining facilities. In fact, data from miningpoolbtc.com shows Bitcoin's mining difficulty, a measure of how hard it is to compete for mining rewards, has stagnated for a month and is currently around the same level seen on January 28. But with Bitcoin's halving event approaching in May, a programmed in-change that will reduce the network's mining rewards from 12.5 BTC per block to 6.25, older models like the S9 will become unprofitable unless Bitcoin's price increases significantly. As such, miners may have to either upgrade or get out of the industry. Bitcoin sees corrective price bounce after hitting one-month lows. View. Bitcoin has made a recovery after falling to a recent low near $8,500 overnight. Short duration charts are calling for an extension of an ongoing corrective bounce to $9,000. A move above key resistance at $9,430 is needed to weaken bearish pressure. Bitcoin BTC has bounced from one-month lows hit early on Thursday and may extend the recovery to $9,000. The cryptocurrency is currently trading at $8,800, having hit a low of $8,520 at 1:15 Coordinated Universal Time this morning, a level last seen on January 26, according to CoinDesk's Bitcoin Price Index. Back then, Bitcoin was starting a rally toward a multi-month high of $10,500 on February 13. Now, however, the picture has become more bleak. Bitcoin lost its upward trajectory on February 19 when prices fell by 5.8%, violating the bullish trendline rising from Jan.3 and January 26 lows. The downside move gathered pace after bull failure to defend $9,400 on Monday activated a bearish head and shoulders pattern on technical charts. The $1,500 sell-off seen in the last 3 days has violated the short-term bullish trend and exposed deeper support levels. However, signs of seller exhaustion seen on the intraday charts suggest scope for an extension of the ongoing recovery rally. The previous 4-hour candle closed on a positive note, suggesting a weakening of downside momentum. That is backed by the long end tail attached to the preceding hammer candle. A below 30 reading on the RSI indicates Bitcoin is oversold, an indicator that has also gained credence with the hammer candle. As a result, Bitcoin could soon challenge the psychological hurdle of $9,000. A break higher would shift the focus to the descending trendline resistance, currently at $9,275. The case for a corrective bounce would weaken if a 4-hour candle closes below $8,520, the low of the hammer candle shown above. That would imply a continuation of the bearish move. Bitcoin closed UTC well below the February 4 low of $9,075 on Wednesday, invalidating the bullish higher lows setup and putting the bears into the driver's seat. The 5- and 10-day averages are trending south, indicating a strong downside momentum. Here, there are no signs yet of oversold conditions. The RSI is hovering in bearish territory below 50 and suggesting scope for a further drop. Put simply, the daily chart is aligned in favor of a drop to $8,280 100-day average and $8,213 January 24 low. The bias will remain bearish as long as prices are trading under the former support-turned-resistance of the head and shoulders neckline, currently at $9,430. Binance throws weight behind Shift Network in travel rule standards race. Binance, the world's largest crypto exchange group, has chosen the Shift Network to help address a looming regulatory requirement that firms must share users' personal data when handling digital asset transactions. Barbados-based Shift Network is one of an array of potential solutions to the Financial Action Task Force's FATF travel rule. The name comes from the stipulation that personally identifiable information must travel with a transaction, no mean feat considering crypto transactions are pseudonymous by design. Shift stands out because they are extremely acute and very well connected with global regulators, said Samuel Lim, Binance's head of compliance. These things we consider to be very important. Of course, the underlying technology stack is core, too. Getting the public endorsement of Binance is a big deal for the Shift Network, a SWIFT-like infrastructure incorporating Ethereum technology. The firm hired former FATF Executive Secretary Rick McDonnell as an advisor last October. "We have been working with a lot of the big exchanges for the last 9 months," said Shift Network co-founder Joseph Weinberg. Binance is the first to publicly come out, but more will definitely be on the way. The FATF, a global anti-money laundering watchdog that sets rules for the G20 group of countries, will review progress on addressing the travel rule for virtual asset service providers (VASPs) in June of this year. But it's still early days as far as the industry is concerned. Binance said it has been in talks with a good 4 or 5 candidate solutions. Shift is not the only solution we are endorsing, but it's the first that we are putting our brand behind. Things could change in the future, but as of now, the focus is on Shift, said Lim. There are a number of moving parts when it comes to meeting travel rule requirements, including creating an identity system across a universe of VASPs, the storing and sharing of personally identifiable information, PII, without compromising privacy, and agreeing on a standardized messaging or data transmission system. Interoperability first. Whatever solutions the industry adopts, interoperability between them is a must. If a European solution does not fit with an Asian solution, then both of them are wrong, said Lim. Maybe at the start these solutions are trying to differentiate themselves and perhaps there is sort of a competing factor, or competitive advantage. But down the road, when they get big enough, they will not have much of a choice other than to be working with others to satisfy the information transfer and relay requirements, he said. The Shift network comprises 3 layers, explained Weinberg. The network itself is a blockchain built from a modified version of the Ethereum codebase. A second layer is a smart contract infrastructure which determines how counterparties are identified and rules about how they share data. The layer on top is where the actual data transmission happens. Weinberg said the lower layers of the system are interoperable with other travel solution providers, mentioning CipherTrace, an advocate of certificate authorities to identify VASPs, NetKey, which favors a decentralized approach, and OpenVASP of Switzerland, which also uses elements of Ethereum technology. We have been working with OpenVASP on interoperability already, Weinberg said. Because the Shift blockchain is a forked version of Ethereum, you can actually deploy all of OpenVASP's smart contracts fully onto Shift. Some players believe a decentralized blockchain-based approach is needed to solve the travel rule problem in a manner appropriate to crypto companies, while others would prefer to rely on more centralized systems. Lim of Binance was decidedly agnostic about the choice of tech. We are not really concerned if this runs on ERC-20, on Ripple, or on Binance Chain. It doesn't really matter. We need a cat that catches the mice. That's the solution for us, he said. Cut the consensus, you can't run a business like a blockchain. William Mogayer, a CoinDesk columnist, is the author of The Business Blockchain, producer of the Token Summit and a venture investor and advisor. It has become trendy to apply blockchain governance principles to almost anything. But if we want to make blockchain organizations work, I believe we need to make an important distinction between the governance of blockchains and governance by blockchains. What works for the technical realm of blockchains does not automatically translate to the running of businesses or social organizations, as attractive as it may be to apply the blockchain novelty factor. Democracy is great for society and government, but it is bad for business. Over the past few years, we have learned a lot from the governance of blockchains, primarily about consensus and decentralization as the two primary characteristics. Consensus in the blockchain context refers to the nodes on the network agreeing to synchronize on the state of transactions for that blockchain. And decentralization is the preferred topology for these nodes. They are geographically distributed and diversely owned. This ensures redundancy of failures as well as a level playing field of participative inclusion, both important outcomes of open blockchains. Our applied knowledge stalls thereafter. We know much less about the field of governance by blockchains, as this is still at the experimental stage. Consensus is a dreadful management practice for decision making. The desire to apply consensus methods and decentralization architectures to how we run organizations is an interesting concept. It stems from well-intentioned objectives wanting to mimic the governance of blockchains as a guiding strategy. In the simplest form, people who have a stake into projects are seen like nodes, and they are given voting power. The more decentralized, the better. Voyel, if it works for a blockchain, it should work for organizations, no? Except that people are not computer nodes and consensus is a dreadful management practice for decision making. Many decentralized projects or ideas are slapping the word DAO to their names, in a loose way. We now have a legal DAO, marketing DAO, investment DAO, jurisdiction DAO, democracy DAO, and so on. I am refraining from naming actual names, though we all know who they are. These groups are obsessed with group voting for decisions, being very transparent about their actions or discussions, and adopting decentralized inclusion from the beginning. As a result, they end up voting on everything and insist on public openness as a modus operandi. The problem with decentralized decisions. Agreeing by majority voting doesn't always result in the most optimal decisions, and it often leads you to compromise at the lowest common denominator level amongst the group, resulting in mediocre outcomes. Most decisions carry a degree of ambiguity and uncertainty that experienced decision makers are used to, whereas a group of people with less experience will rather debate these ambiguities for a long time, still without resolving them. The tough and bold decisions are left untackled and never made by consensus because there will always be dissenting voices that will prevent these decisions from taking place. For example, a given idea might be beneficial economically to the majority of users, but not to a minority of them immediately. Do you change the decision so that all users get lower benefits, or do you take the tough decision to optimize for the majority of users first? There are never perfect decisions. Popularity doesn't always lead to the right decision. Just because it is popular doesn't mean it's the best. One squeaky voice could lead to endless discussions, halting progress or delaying voting, without regard for urgencies or efficiency in implementation. The voting method can also break down when you end up with a less experienced majority that votes on the wrong decision. When the barriers are low for getting a seat at the table, just being there doesn't say anything about the experience level of participants. Overvoting can lead to zigzagging into iterative decisions with an appearance of progress. Popularity doesn't always lead to the right decision. Just because it is popular doesn't mean it's the best. Do politicians get voted in power because they are really competent or because they become popular enough to garner the required votes? Many elected officials, and even presidents or prime ministers, end up as bad choices after being elected, but the electors are stuck with them until their term is up. Elections by popularity vote are a type of irreversible decision-making that is hard to undo, even as we believe in the wisdom of the crowd thesis that more people deciding equals better deciding. How about accountability? In the most optimistic scenarios, the outcome of decisions turns out as predicted, but in many cases, things don't always go as planned. Who is responsible for fixing what happened as a result of a bad decision? We can't say, well, we voted on that and wash our hands. If 20 people voted on something and things don't work out, who is to blame? Who will pick up the ball and fix things, change course or reverse decisions to ensure success? Many decentralized blockchain projects do not appreciate the need for central leadership, and they brush that aside. It is not cool to take orders from others, or it's not decentralized enough. Let the community decide, say decentralization advocates. But you can't ignore leadership, because it is needed. Decentralization should not be about rejecting hierarchies and people management. The reality is that you can't vote on everything, and people need to be managed with accountability in mind first. Then there is the issue of culture. When decentralized groups are instantly assembled and they meet only sporadically, coalescing around a homogeneous culture or agreeing on principles is difficult to achieve. In the context of blockchain operations, each decentralized node works for its own economic advantage, like a mercenary. But putting mercenaries together in a room doesn't automatically yield cohesiveness at the required level of sound group dynamics. Do DAOs work? We are still in the early generation of DAOs. Almost 4 years have elapsed since the first DAO malfunctioned, but we haven't had 4 years of experience working on iterative models since then. Only recently have we started to tinker again with business-minded DAO and decentralized decision-making across a variety of applied scenarios. It is easy to start a DAO, but much more challenging to devise the right structure to support and operationalize it. We need to evolve the concept of business-minded DAOs with another level of sophistication among its practitioners. Baking programmable decision-making before enough experience has been gathered or previously acquired in whatever other relevant domain is a sure recipe for disaster. Decentralization should not be about rejecting hierarchies and people management. Governance is a very promising application of blockchains, perhaps after the transfer, ownership of money and the emerging field of decentralized finance. But blockchains and new age governance are not going to reinvent the process of decision making by throwing away decades of management soundness and best practices experience. However, we do need more experiments to see if and how we can improve upon what we already have. For example, there are promising ideas in innovative voting mechanisms, such as quadratic voting, capital-constrained liberal radicalism, CLR, voting and other related variations that go beyond the blanket one-person one-equal vote tradition. Quadratic voting is a distribution method that lets voters assign more than one vote across candidates. CLR voting takes into account the total number of votes and their provenance, not just the weight of that vote. So, for example, 500 votes from a weight of 1 share counts more than a single vote with a weight of 1,000 shares. Technical consensus in blockchains has been well defined and documented, and is backed by many years of research that culminated in Nakamoto putting it all together into Bitcoin and its blockchain. But using blockchain consensus methods just for the sake of using them in business is not necessarily a breakthrough itself. In business, life and technology, good decisions are good because they produce success. But good decisions are only judged in the rearview mirror, well after outcomes fully unravel. You can't easily automate decision-making just by configuring logic into a smart contract and trying to mimic and predict all scenarios that need judgment rather than automation. You must ask, what are we trying to fix or invent? And do we have the right people with the relevant domain experience and expertise at the table, beyond just knowing about blockchains? You must define and organize your processes early on, and not fall into the trap of wanting to decentralize everything too quickly. Not every process needs to be on-chain. When embarking on a DAO experiment, you need to be clear on what is DAOable and what is not. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again PayCademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.